You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network. New shows every day. Find us at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Welcome to the San Jose Hockey Now podcast, your trusted source for all things San Jose Sharks on the Hockey Podcast Network. My name is Nick Floor. Joining me, as always, is editor-in-chief of San Jose Hockey Now and my co-host, Shang Peng. Shang, how's the night going so far?
Very good. Happy, like the San Jose Sharks, to be back at home. That was a long road trip. By the time we finished in New York, I was like, wait, we have one more game to go? And the way the Sharks played in Columbus, they had the same attitude, too.
Yeah, it seems like you all had your air legs or, you know, they have like sea legs. It was just quite a way to lose that game. But good thing for Sharks fans is they showed out against Calgary, a divisional opponent where it mattered the most. And they have, I always forget that Minnesota isn't in their division anymore. COVID has ruined like the divisional lineups for me now. I think I called them like a division. I called the Minnesota Wild a divisional opponent today on Twitter, and I was like, I have to delete that tweet. They're not in the division anymore.
Well, it's a good thing because they're a really good team.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking of that Calgary game, there was a notable player that was scratched, and that's going to be the highlight of this week's episode. So Kevin LeBanc found himself sitting in the press box against the Calgary Flames. So on this week's episode, we're going to talk about the Kevin LeBanc problem, and we'll delve into some potential solutions down the road for the Sharks. Then Shank's going to give us the latest Evander Kane trade chatter and everything surrounding him. And then afterwards, we highlight this week's SportLogic stat of the week. So we highlight a specific player in general. So
and it's stats of the week this week. So we're giving you more for your money.
Plural. The free subscription. Before we get into it, of course, we have our due diligence here. We'd like to first note the date for all the listeners. Currently 10:30 on the, what is it, the 8th? Yeah, the 8th. Wednesday night, December 8th, and we're recording this. So if Evander Kane gets traded first thing in the morning, this is outdated. But
speaking of, I've heard the phrase due diligence so many times with Evander Kane over the last week, as in we're doing our due diligence or they're doing their due diligence.
Yeah.
So
I bet.
Tired of that phrase. Tired.
Getting tired of the double D right now. And of course, a quick shout out to our social media handles. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at SJ Hockey Now Pod. You can follow the network at HockeyPodNet. You can follow myself and my overreactionary game day tweets at NickFloor_ and Shang.
Follow me at Shang_Peng and all my work at San Jose Hockey Now and NBC Sharks.
All right, Shang. We got a nice little interview clip we're going to play for everyone right now of you telling Kevin LeBanc that he was called Kevin Ovechkin, so we're going to play that right now.
That's from a couple weeks ago.
They were calling you Kevin Ovechkin just a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I don't know about that, but I got a long ways to go before they say that again.
700 or so goals.
Yeah, 700 or so goals. Yeah, counting.
So, with that clip, he laughs at it. We, you know, you guys all have a little laugh about him getting that nickname of Kevin Ovechkin, but boy, has that name fallen off quite badly lately. Let's talk about Kevin. Let's talk about the situation surrounding him. I'll go ahead and let you start.
Yeah, that was aspirational, and we had a good run with that. Hopefully, it can come back to fruition. Anyway, going into the season with Kevin, I think the Sharks were really, really hoping And the original training camp lines, from what I recall, the first day, it was Nick Bonino, Kevin LeBanc, and actually Rudolph Balzers. And in theory, that sounds like a pretty intriguing third line. Nick Bonino has been a third line center for a Stanley Cup winner, has played with skilled players in a Phil Kessel and succeeded. LeBanc has scored 50 points. Balzers last year scored at, I think, about a half a point clip, you know, going up and down the lineup. And you were looking at a third line that had some offensive potential for once, you know, with the Sharks, because we haven't had too much of that the last couple of years. And a line like that, if that succeeded, that really would give the Sharks a lot of scoring depth, which we also haven't seen a lot the last couple of years. And for whatever reason, the Bonino-LeBanc partnership really just didn't work out, hasn't worked out. And the question then is, well, why hasn't it worked out, right?
Yeah, it seems as if, like, that should be a match made in heaven. Like, I know we talked to Jack Hahn about it a little bit with Pavelski taking a quote-unquote backseat to, like, Rupe Hintz and Robertson in Dallas, and it's... The first thing that came to my mind was like, oh, that's paralleled with Nick Bonino. You have that player of that age who isn't as fast. You need to pair him with someone who's got more quote-unquote skill, and they can complement each other's skill set, and it doesn't seem to have worked. And more or less has worked for Noah Gregor now with Nick Bonino than Kevin LeBanc.
Right. So, yeah, let's talk a little bit more about maybe why the exact fit hasn't been there. But I think, though, in general, though, I spoke with three NHL scouts, and the answer was all the same, just in terms of what's going on with Kevin LeBanc this year. And it's simply that LeBanc is a complimentary winger and not somebody who drives a line. And I think the Sharks were hoping that LeBanc could be somebody that drives a line in a bottom six role, take advantage of better matchups there, and again, really give the Sharks a scoring depth that they haven't had since 2018-19. And basically with Kevin, and I know a lot of you have said it online, Kevin LeBanc is somebody that needs to play with good players. That's what appears to be the case here. We saw him succeed with Joe Thornton in 2018-19. That's when LeBanc scored, I think it was 56 points. And 2018-19 was Jumbo's last impact year. We saw Kevin do well in stretches last year with Logan Couture and Evander Kane, both top six NHL players. Anyway, Nick Bonino and Jasper Weatherby, Lane Peterson, Weatherby and Peterson, that's who LeBanc has been playing with most recently. Those guys aren't in the echelon of Joe Thornton, Logan Couture, and Evander Kane. And maybe Bonino is or was. Again, like I mentioned, Bonino has excelled with skilled players. And Bonino has scored 20 goals in this league, too. But the fit just hasn't been there with Nick Bonino. One scout I talked to, he offered that he sees Bonino as more of a cycle player and LeBanc as more of a rush player. And we have seen this year what works with Nick Bonino, at least Nick Bonino now. And we've seen it with, you mentioned Noel Gregor, Cogliano, Nieto. And it's a lot of speed on the forecheck that can get Bonino the puck kind of in tight below the tops of the circles where, as we've seen recently, Nick Bonino is still dangerous down there.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's quite LeBanc. You know, LeBanc is, I think, a little better on the forecheck than people give him credit for, but still, he's not sort of that greyhound on the forecheck. You know, Kevin LeBanc doesn't have that kind of speed. He doesn't have that kind of he doesn't have Noel Gregor speed. He doesn't have the Cogliano speed plus veteran wiles, that sort of thing, and maybe the strength there too to win as many pucks like a Cogliano can win.
And like, let's dig deep into the bag. You mentioned that Joe Thornton line that people forget the other winger on that line was Marcus Sorensen. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not talking about like a grade A level playmaker, but where Marcus Sorensen was great was, and I'm going to throw the invisible air quotes, is the dirty areas. He was able to go in on the forecheck very well, fish a lot of those pucks out, and then he would get the puck to Joe Thornton. LeBanc just had to be in the right spot at that point. He wasn't tasked with a lot of the heavy grinding duties down low that would complement a player like Nick Bonino now.
Right, right. And I think they started the season this year, Nieto, Bonino, and LeBanc, and it just didn't quite crystallize. You would think that maybe Nieto is that guy that can do some of that dirty work, mm-hmm. and it just didn't quite pan out. And anyway, you know, also, too, on such a line, too, LeBanc becomes, you know, your best player. And maybe that shouldn't be his role on the line either. Like I said, he's not seen as somebody that can drive a line. And so we talk about the Sorensen, Thornton, LeBanc trio. And Thornton is obviously your kingpin player on that line. And you talk about Couture and Kane and LeBanc. You know, LeBanc is, and I don't mean this in a negative way, but LeBanc is the worst player on that line. But he can complement higher quality players, better all around players like a Couture and Kane. Mm-hmm. So anyway, you know, it doesn't sound like we're saying too much. Like, okay, Kevin LeBanc needs to play with good players. That doesn't sound like much of a brainstorm there.
Analytics.
Exactly. But I think the problem, though, then we see, though, if you look at the Sharks as they're currently constituted, LeBanc is left out a little bit in the cold with San Jose's current top six, where maybe he needs to play to produce. And right now we have with San Jose's top six, we have the Couture line that has been untouchable so far. That line of Dahlin, Meyer, and Couture, that's the exact line that came out the first day of training camp.
Yeah,
it's what the coaches imagined from day one, and it's worked out. So then that leaves the Tomáš Hertl line.
Poor Hertl. Just can't find consistent teammates.
Maybe he can't, but, you know, I'm going to give Alexander Barabanov some credit. That Barabanov has done some good things on that line. And I think a Barabanov duplicates LeBanc's skill set in some ways. But I think he's done it better than LeBanc this year.
And cheaper.
And cheaper, too, yeah. But that's neither here nor there, though. So I don't know if you want to put a Barabanov and LeBanc on the same line with Hertl. That could be kind of a tough defensively too. And also, who's going to go get the puck on a line like that, right? Mm-hmm. And that's why Rudy Balzers is on that line. He offers a different skill set than a Barabanov and a LeBanc and a Hertl. You know, Balzers kind of is more likely, more apt to go into those dirty areas to get the puck. Balzers is a small player, but Balzers does play big. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when you put together a line, that's sort of what you kind of calculate, how just different skills mix and that sort of thing. You don't want the same kind of player. And so, again, so that leaves LeBanc kind of out in the cold in the bottom six, or I'm sorry, out of the top six. And then, you know, therefore, the Sharks are hoping that he finds that chemistry with Nick Bonino, and so they can form a dangerous third line, but that hasn't happened. And, you know, one thing that Bob Bugner said recently when a couple days ago when we talked to him about Kevin LeBanc and scratching him, and I asked him, well, you know, Kevin maybe hasn't found the chemistry with his line mates, his centermen, be it Bonino or Weatherby. And Bob just said flat out, like, I don't blame his line mates. You got to take personal accountability for your own game. And I don't think Bob is wrong about that. even though it sounds like, you know, with what I've been saying for the last 5 minutes, that I kind of think he's wrong about that. But I actually don't think he is wrong about that. There's a lot of things that Kevin LeBanc can do in his own game that has nothing to do with putting up points or, you know, Kevin LeBanc turning Jasper Weatherby into a 20-goal scorer. That's not what anybody is asking Kevin LeBanc to do.
Mm-hmm.
There are things that Kevin can do, improving his own game when he's not scoring, that can help the team out. You know, be better along the wall. Be better on the forecheck. Don't lose those battles along the wall or chasing loose pucks. Make sure when you get the puck out, you get the puck out and you're not turning it over in the middle of the ice in the defensive zone. And of course, when you do get those few chances in a game, offensive chances, you gotta bury it, or you gotta make that pass so your teammate can bury it.
Yeah.
And so I think that combination of things has been missing with Kevin's game, be it defensively or offensively. But of course, on the offensive side, you can't sympathize with LeBanc this season to some degree, insofar as his teammates haven't been the best, and maybe again, his game is a complementary game and just is not a fit for the Sharks' bottom six as it is right now. Just don't have a player that can play well with him in that role.
Yeah, and you would think also with what Bob has said, we as fans, and I say we, I mean me and the Sharks fans, you being a media member, you're more adept at looking at things off puck as opposed to like a Sharks fan that's watching the game. A lot of the fans, you know, we're following the puck around, we're watching the action. And I'm sure a lot of that has to do with LeBanc's play off the puck as opposed to offensive production. And then when you boil it down to his offensive production, it just hasn't necessarily been there. It started off well when he was dubbed Kevin Ovechkin after those one-timers on the face-off dot. But it's like you got to find that consistency. And then like Bob said, personal accountability. So I'm not going to speculate anything, but you want to see a response when you give players assignments, i.e. Tomas Hertl. So Bob Bugner has a heart-to-heart with Hertl, and then he scores a hat trick 2 games later. Like, you can't expect that to happen, but you want to see like that extra drive. You want to see that player take the next step, you know, forecheck harder. It shows up on tape, and I'm sure that's what Bob and the coaching staff is looking at when they're going over their individual meetings with Kevin, and they're like, look, we told you, and it just doesn't seem like we're getting more effort out of you. Maybe you should take the night off. Hopefully that will kind of give you that smelling salt effect and help wake your game up. But
like you said,
if I go back to my Tomas Hertl case, Hertl got the exact same line mates and more productive line mates in Barabanov and Balcers. So Kevin LeBanc kind of getting the cold shoulder as far as like complementary skills around him, yes. I figure if he finds his way back into the lineup, the leash might be short, but I don't want to speculate, obviously. But you would hope that they would try to find a way to make it work with him, so that way you can capitalize using what he can bring to the table. In my opinion, you shouldn't have to do that with a guy who's making almost $5 million, you know. But that's just kind of the situation that the Sharks have put themselves in involving Kevin LeBanc, and it's a situation that Doug Wilson has put the coaching staff in, you know, signing him to that contract. So,
yeah, maybe that's the reality with LeBanc, that you hope that he could drive a line, a bottom six line, and maybe it's just not really in his game. Mm-hmm. You know, there is sort of that. I don't think the coaching staff expects Kevin LeBanc to turn Lane Peterson into a 20-goal scorer or anything like that.
Yeah,
I don't think that's what the coaching staff is talking about. But
yeah.
I think what happens, though, with a lot of players is when you're not producing on one side of the puck, it can bleed into the other side of your game. And I think that's what the coaching staff has seen with LeBanc.
Yeah.
That the other things are have slipped this year. And of course, this isn't the first time, even this year, that the coaching staff has talked to Kevin or kind of put it out there that there are things that they really need him to work on. If you remember after the Colorado game, the game when all the players came back from COVID, and LeBanc took a pretty bad penalty in that game that Bob was very, very unhappy with. Mm-hmm. And that was one example of that, of the coaching staff already putting LeBanc on notice. And when we asked Bob about scratching Kevin in the Calgary, before the Calgary game, he said that the coaching staff had talked to LeBanc during the road trip a couple days before, or a couple games before, I think he said. So sometime during the road trip, they were telling him, look, you got to do this, this, and this. And they didn't get this, this, and this from Kevin a couple games later. And so that's why you escalate the message to, okay, you know, we took it to the media kind of and put it out there. Of course, we've talked with you the whole time. Then we had a private kind of meeting with you. And, so it's been a couple kind of meetings like that. And the game still hasn't changed enough.
Yeah.
And so now you have to sit and watch. And hopefully that'll spark something. And, you know, where you have sympathy for Kevin is that, okay, you know, if LeBanc plays against Minnesota, and based on the practice lines from earlier today, it's going to be back on the fourth line. You know, he was practicing with Peterson, Gadjevich, and Weatherby.
Yeah.
So he didn't magically, you know, earn himself for a promotion next to Tommy Hurdle or Logan Couture. So it's going to be a little more challenging, obviously, for Kevin to kind of, put his stamp on the game, just insofar as he's a more offensive guy and his line mates aren't offensive guys. But that's just a situation that he finds himself in, and he's got to kind of play himself out of it and show that he needs to be on a higher line, be it with, you know, try him with Bonino again and maybe put a different complimentary winger next to them. Maybe it'd be better. Maybe put Noel Gregor next to Bonino and LeBanc. And maybe Noel Gregor can go get those pucks and that sort of thing. I don't know. I'm not sure about that part of it, but still, it's not as easy, obviously, as, okay, show us your game, Kevin, and do it next to Tommy Hurdle and score some points. So, I mean, that's easier than doing it with Lane Peterson or Weatherby or whatever. But the Sharks' top six is at the moment pretty set. So barring an injury, that is, you know, Kevin LeBanc's lot. Once again, you know, he's not necessarily going to replace a Meyer. No, he's no way going to replace a Meyer.
Never.
Right? And he's not going to replace Dolan right now just because of the fit with Dolan. And he's not going to replace necessarily Barabanov at the moment because they may have a similar skill set, but Barabanov is doing it better. Like I mentioned, Balzers has a different skill set.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to echo. I don't want to be in the echo chamber here, but it seems like last season we saw two different things happen for the Sharks. We saw Ryan Donato find his way out of the top six, off the power play, and onto the Seattle Kraken.
Right.
And, you know, didn't even get a qualifying offer. And then we saw Barabanov start in the bottom six and end up on Tomas Hertl's line. So, like, who is Kevin LeBanc going to be in this scenario? Is he going to be the Ryan Donato for the Sharks that is fading down to the bottom six, stays there, and gets traded away for the change of scenery or the hockey trade that you referred to last year at last year's trade deadline? Or is he going to elevate his gameplay? He's young enough to be able to know how to continue to grow his game. He's smart enough to do it. It's all about executing at this point. And yes, to your point, can beating the dead horse here, or reiterating, it's not the best line mates, but you got to find a way to make it work if you're going to work your way in or try to work your way into that top six. Make it difficult for Bob to not put you next to Tomas Hertl, and it doesn't seem like he is at all.
Right. Right, and that's a great example with Ryan Donato. Actually, with Barabanov, I don't recall if he started in the bottom six or not. But your point though is well taken though that you know Donato is a great example of a player going sharply downward, right? Because Ryan Donato, what the people hoped, the Sharks hoped that he would be a top six player. They said so, and they hoped that he could be a 20 goal, not in a shortened season, but you know a guy that would be a 20 goal scorer in a regular season, and that went south quickly. But you know, can LeBanc go north with this game? That's what we're hoping. Unlike a Donato, you can't just walk away from him. Like you mentioned, the Sharks and the contract they've signed LeBanc to, it's two more years after this year at 4.725. At the time it was signed, you know, I think it was reasonable for his productivity level. But right now, though, it's looking like quite a drag, obviously, you know, guy with, right, putting it nicely, with 6 points in 19 games. So the Sharks have no choice, kind of, but in some ways, unless they want to trade him, you know, 50 cents on a dollar, but to see if he can figure out how to, I guess, improve his game. And I will say that the Sharks have found some degree of success with that patience this year, obviously, be it with Timo Meier, who was in a doghouse like LeBanc last year, or Erik Karlsson, who has been underperforming with a massive contract, right, for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. And they didn't find that success with Vlasic, but LeBanc is young enough. And that's one thing I will say that I don't think I've made clear so far in our little talk here so far. Yeah. I don't care about Kevin LeBanc having 6 points in 19 games, and so far as I think he's still a very, very skilled player. I've seen nothing that tells me that if you put him with the right line mates or whatnot, that he couldn't put up 40, 50 points just like, well, Doug Wilson promised 60 points, but Doug Wilson didn't promise that he'd score that number of points next to Nick Bonino or Lane Peterson.
Yeah, that was the fine print of that quote that we didn't see.
Exactly. That was a parenthesis right there. He'll score 60 points, but not just with anybody, though.
Yeah. He'll score 60 points with Joe Thornton.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to kind of move forward here. So, like, let's say the Sharks don't play the patience game with Nick Bonino. Let's say they don't play that patience game with Kevin LeBanc. Mm-hmm. You know, like you said, it's paid off with Timo Meier thus far. Erik Karlsson is on a tear right now. If they don't play the patience game, what do we foresee that could possibly happen with LeBanc? There's been a lot of rumors floating around, especially since the Bruins have made it known that Jake DeBrusk is going to be essentially put out.
He's on the market. Yeah.
He's on the block. So.
Yeah, he's on the block.
So talk me through this. You think a one-for-one would suffice? Or because I know you've talked about this before, actually, I think you mentioned talking about it last year around the trade deadline. But you think that's a possibility if the Sharks just run out of patience with Kevin?
Well, it might be a possibility. It might be something that the Sharks would be interested in, but I'm not sure if I see Boston being interested.
Mm.
For one thing, Jake DeBrusk, even though the production hasn't been there with him and there are questions about him. Like, his style of game is a game that kind of people like and are attracted to, at least in hockey circles. You know, that big skating guy who's physical, that sort of thing. And so I will say that Jake DeBrusk that has figured it out is a lot more valuable than a Kevin LeBanc that's figured it out.
Especially on the line with Nick Bonino, if he's running that sort of physical, good skating. I mean, we know how much Doug Jr. loves good skaters.
Sure.
So
yeah,
if he's
running
that physicality down low on the third line, I mean, at a much smaller cap hit, if he's able to click with Bones down there, that could pay dividends.
Yeah. So we're talking about ceiling, right? I think that DeBrusk's ceiling is looked upon more favorably than a Kevin LeBanc's ceiling. Really? LeBanc obviously is a point producer, but is somewhat, you know, a bit one-dimensional in his game, whereas I think that DeBrusk offers maybe a little bit of scoring punch, but a little more physicality, you know, just a little more variety to his game that makes him more appealing if he's on his game. And I think a couple other points with DeBrusk too that people forget is, I know it's easy to kind of put together, two underperforming players about the same age, et cetera, et cetera. Well, let's just trade them. Kevin LeBanc, like we mentioned, is owed $4.725 million for two more years after this one. Jake DeBrusk only has one more year left in his contract this year at $3.6 million. So you have to ask yourself realistically, why does Boston make that trade? Unless they really like Kevin LeBanc. Which is possible, but I haven't received any sense of that talking to people that Boston likes Kevin LeBanc that much.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's one of those things, again, you know, where these are players of two different styles. And if a team was interested in Kevin LeBanc's style insofar as a playmaker first, a guy who I think can still help your power play, even though he hasn't had too much success on it this year besides the early season Kevin Ovechkin run there. But if a team likes a LeBanc, then maybe a trade like that can happen. But like I said, the contract is a barrier with a Boston and a DeBrusk. And also, too, would Boston be interested? Yeah. I don't
Takes
know.
Two to tango.
Exactly. I don't know for sure if San Jose would be interested, but I would guess they would be. I would guess because you get to get out of the LeBanc contract. And like I said, the DeBrusk game at its best offers maybe a wider portfolio of kind of qualities and whatnot, whereas LeBanc's qualities are a little more limited, even though they are good qualities. LeBanc is good at what he's good at. But anyway, so no, I'm not seeing it with Boston myself.
Gotcha. And you know, you're talking similar age between the two, similar, I'll say it lightly, statistical letdowns in that sense. So, I mean, it's one of those things where the Sharks did a one-for-one last season with Antti Suomela to Barabanov, not a trade as of, you know, a high caliber. I don't even think the NHL tweeted it out. Maybe they did because of legal ramifications.
I mean, that's a whole different animal. I think that Toronto was doing, to some degree, Barabanov a favor. Yeah, because I think they had promised a little more playing time and just a little more opportunity. And Toronto obviously is a deep forward group, and Barabanov couldn't quite break it. Actually, I've been saving this story for some other time. I think it's a good one.
But we won't talk about it. It's just a
I'm trying to think of how to phrase it. I need to phrase it very exactly. Let's just say that among my friends or acquaintances or colleagues or whatever who are NHL scouts that, you know, I talked on a regular basis, that the Barabanov-Suomela talent swap was a head-scratcher insofar as people I was talking to was like, wait, Toronto took Suomela? And not in a good way.
Gotcha.
So, yeah. So,
that makes sense.
Yeah. So, anyway, yeah. So let's not look at that as...
I was more or less just drawing parallels to the Sharks being able to win a one-for-one recently.
Oh, sure.
Maybe they can find a way to win this one-for-one if they end up... If Bob goes to Doug, or in this case, Bob goes to Joe Will, and he's like, hey, look, all right, we need to try to find a way to offload him and get something that we could work with.
Right.
We like Jake. He's from State Farm. So they bring him in, they double down their insurance, and they find a way to execute it on the third line at a lower cap hit. And for a Sharks team that's so cap-strapped, if you can find a way to do that, I feel like it would pay off.
Even if
you're even getting the exact same level of production, it's still a win on like a cap perspective. So.
Well, yeah, and also too, like I said, if DeBrusk is productive, playing his best, he also offers kind of a wider range of skills too. But again, like I said, you had to get Boston interested if you're trying to make Kevin LeBanc your centerpiece. And that probably means with LeBanc's a more pernicious, longer contract, that you got to add something to a LeBanc. And maybe you don't want to because it might be more than you want to pay. I wanted to also actually, one of the scouts I was talking to today had an interesting idea. And this is more along the lines of how you keep Kevin LeBanc on the Sharks and turn his year around a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be kind of a weird idea because this guy has been very, very bad this year for the Blackhawks. And from what I understand, too, from what I've heard, the offers that the Blackhawks have been receiving for him have been very low ball, which could actually be a good thing for the Sharks. But the player is Dylan Strom. And or is it Strom?
I believe it's Strom.
It's Strom. Yep. You know, you fall in hard times as a lottery pick if people can't even say your name right. So yeah, I'm pretty sure you're right though. It's Strom, not Strom. But anyway, Dylan Strom. And Dylan Strom has been a productive player in this league. He scored, I think, 51 points. I think a couple years ago between the Blackhawks and the Coyotes.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah. And he has been a regular scratch for the Blackhawks this year, especially under Jeremy Colleton. Mm-hmm. And under Derek King, the Blackhawks' new coach, from what I understand, he's been given a little bit more of a chance. He's been better, et cetera, et cetera. But the Blackhawks, I think, they're listening on a Strom. And the offers, like I've heard, have been very low, and maybe so low that, maybe the Chicago just says, you know what, we'll just keep the guy. We don't need to take your low pick or your grade C prospect for him. We may as well just keep him.
Is it even worth the paperwork for them at that point?
Exactly. And so that might keep a Strom in Chicago. But if San Jose wanted to throw its hat in the ring and, maybe offer up a little bit more than whatever out there Chicago is getting so far. Okay, so this is why this idea seemed interesting to the scout, and I kind of bought into it. Dylan Strom is not a good defensive player. There's a reason why he couldn't, he hasn't been able to cut it with the Blackhawks and whatnot. So Dylan Strom is not coming in, and he's not, going. He shouldn't play top six for you. If he's playing top six for you, then your team probably isn't very deep, like the Blackhawks haven't been over the last a couple of years.
Yeah.
But the idea is that maybe you need to spark a Kevin LeBanc with playing him with more offensive players.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you kind of form a bottom six line with a Strom, with a LeBanc, and then you put somebody on there that can, go fetch the puck and cover for Strom and LeBanc, maybe like a Cogliano or something like that. And then suddenly you have a very interesting mix in the bottom six for the Sharks, where you have a very defensive line, bottom six line, headlined by Nick Bonino, mm-hmm. and whoever Nick Bonino is playing with. And then you have a very offensive bottom six line, headlined by Strom and LeBanc. And I think that actually presents kind of an interesting matchup thing. The Sharks could become a way more dangerous team this way. And you're adding into the idea that Strom is maybe can be had for a very cheap offer. The Sharks have a little cap space now with Evander Kane in the minors. And you might be able to unlock both players. Strom and LeBanc are both offensive players. And you can unlock kind of both of their games a little bit that way. And I think one question that some fans might have is, well, what happens to a Jasper Weatherby, right? Weatherby mm-hmm. is waiver exempt. Peterson. Yeah, but I think Weatherby's the more key one there, because he is sort of the younger, the more prospect guy there. And, mm-hmm. Weatherby, Jasper may benefit from playing big minutes in with the Barracuda. He could, or you can keep him around as your 13th forward. The same goes for a Peterson or a Gadjevich.
Jasper, who was just recently scratched as well due to, you know, from what we've, I believe what Bob said, you know, just sometimes you hit that wall, you go through these long road trips, so give him that day off. So, like you said, he could benefit from top line minutes down in the AHL.
Yeah.
This could work.
Yeah, I think Jasper's been pretty good up in the NHL for, you know, considering where he came from last year, when I think very few people had expectations for him to make the NHL at all, maybe, and especially not right out of college. But any first year pro, I think, could potentially benefit from a lot of minutes down in the AHL as opposed to 10 a night in the NHL. So. Yeah. Anyway, so that was just one idea. This was not an idea that it's sort of like, it's not a rumor. I'm not trying to start a rumor. It's not something where like I think or know that San Jose has talked to Chicago or my
Breaking
source.
News.
Right? It's not any of that. So yeah. So don't. Don't extrapolate from
this,
that,
folks.
But it's just sort of a speculating there, and it was just an interesting idea of, well, okay, we talk about the future, right, and what to do with the Kevin LeBanc. His contract is tough to get rid of right now because he's scoring at, you know, right now on an 82-game pace, he's going to score like 25 points or something like that. You know, no one wants that. No one wants an offensive player at $4.725 million that's scoring you 25 points, right? So
no.
Yeah, so instead of trading him at 50 cents on the dollar, because I do, again, I'm going to say this again, that I still think he has legitimate talent, and he has 40, 50-point talent. Again, maybe not 60 points like Doug promised, but a good 40, 50 points. I think he has that still. He's got to put the right people around him. And so instead of trading him you know, pennies on a dollar or whatever, or just trying to get under from that contract, which is a very common Sharks problem, right? And one you want to avoid. Maybe try to find a guy like a Strome that maybe can complement Kevin LeBanc, but on a lower line where they're not exposed as much, but they're still at a, you're putting Kevin with a skilled player that can get him the puck in the right places, that can put away Kevin's passes. So it's just a thought. I thought it was an interesting one. I don't know if it has any legs. It probably has no more legs than LeBanc for DeBrus swap, but it's just a thought for how to salvage your asset and not think about just how to get out from under your asset for and, you know, take 50 cents on a dollar, but how to salvage it and make your asset you know, shine it up a bit.
Yeah, if it can perform at a 75% efficiency rate, that's better than selling it at a 50% rate.
Right, so exactly.
That's just math at that point. Shang's trying to create the all gas, no brakes fourth line for the Sharks.
That would be interesting. I don't know. I kind of like that idea of, you know, some games, depending on the matchup, you play a Bonino line more, the more defensive line more. But some games, depending on the matchup, you can maybe use a more offensive skilled fourth line to really, you know, exploit the other team.
Could you imagine, like, just a purely downhill, they only take offensive zone face-offs, and they just absolutely crush people?
Why not? Just, yeah.
I mean, reinvent the game, right? We saw what Trevor Zegras did with his pass, so we might as well try. I think that... go ahead, Shang, sorry.
I just want to say, like, if... you know, the team is visiting SAP Center, and your fourth line is your typical John Hayden, those kind of guys, right? And that's who the coach throws over the boards. And you're staring at San Jose's fourth line, and it has Dylan Strome and Kevin LeBanc. I mean, those are two guys that, again, have scored 50-plus points at an NHL level. That can be a deadly fourth line on an offensive zone faceoff.
And they're familiar with the back of the net, so you better be. It could present, like you said, a lot of mismatches or some weird matchups on the ice. So that would be fun to watch, just for the hell of it, just to see what would happen. So
yeah,
pure chaos. That's what we're here for. I think that pretty much sums up our thoughts, our prognosis on the Kevin LeBanc problem is what we're going to call it. We're going to use that term loosely because it's not necessarily a problem, but or not as much as a problem as another
as the next guy,
Sharks. As the next guy on the show. Great segue there, Shane. Hey guys, we just want to take a quick break to thank this week's sponsor, DraftKings Sportsbook. Football fans, I'm sure we all love an action-packed, high-scoring NFL game, but with the latest no-brainer from DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, you'll be a winner once a single point is scored. That's right, folks. New customers who bet just $1 on any team to score can win $100 in free bets. It's that simple. And don't worry if Sportsbook isn't available in your state yet, you can still get in on the NFL action. Everyone can play for huge cash prizes all season long with DraftKings Daily Fantasy Sports Contests. It's simple, everyone. Just download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now, use promo code THPN, bet $1 on any team to score, and win $100 in free bets. If they score, you score with promo code THPN this week at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older, New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania only, new customers only, minimum $5 deposit and $1 wager required, one per customer, restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. So yeah, let's move right into it. So Shing, you've got some, you've heard some chatter, you've been on the phones. You've been talking to some sources, from what I've heard. My sources are telling me you've had your sources. So what's the current chatter right now in the NHL world involving Vander Kane and a trade possibility?
I have heard that there is interest. I've heard that there is a GM interested, obviously with salary retained by San Jose, but he has to take it to ownership. And I think that that's a very key part in a lot of the due diligence that people are doing with Kane.
That, so when you say he has to take it to ownership, what do you mean specifically?
Well, not surprisingly, this is not purely a hockey decision, right? Trading for Evander Kane. Yeah. Purely, if we talk about purely on the ice, Evander Kane is worth $7 million a year. He's worth $3.5 million a year. He's worth $1.75 million a year. However you divide it, Evander Kane on the ice is definitely worth that money.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the locker room stuff, for one, to start with, that you have to calculate if you can chance having a Kane in your room. And yeah. I just want to preface it, too, just to say it, too, that that stuff is very real. That's the reason why Evander Kane isn't with the Sharks now. It's the locker room stuff. It's not the COVID thing. It's not Anna Kane's allegations. It's not the media, which is the most ridiculous thing I've heard that I haven't really addressed. But I wish we had that kind of power to dictate what the Sharks do with their managerial decisions. We don't. But no, it's the locker room stuff. That's why Evander is with the Barracuda, and the Sharks are, you know, doing Shark stuff.
They're sharking it up.
Charking it up, yeah. So anyway, so the locker room stuff is real with Evander. Also, too, of course, not to downplay it at all, the off-the-ice stuff, all the stuff we've talked about, you have to chance that, too. What's going to come back on Evander or bite Evander from the past? What's going to happen in the future?
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it's becomes an ownership decision. Again, there's no issues with him on the ice. There is the other stuff, like you said, the locker room stuff, the off the ice stuff. Yeah, you have to kind of calculate, take your guess on. But, you know, then the question becomes, is your ownership willing to take on PR problems, chance, future off the ice problems, along with this multi-year contract, even if it's a reduced amount because San Jose has retained some of it. But it's still a multi-year commitment to a guy like Evander Kane that may cause future off-the-ice problems. And so that's sort of where I think it's at now. Teams are doing their due diligence. They're checking out, you know, things that Anna Kane has said. they're checking out this and that with the locker room stuff, obviously, is a huge, huge thing too. And I don't know if there is going to be a trade or not. I'm not as confident about it as maybe some people are, because I think that I think that the cost of trading a Kane may not be worth it to the Sharks. And I'm not sure if the demand is so high for him that a team just doesn't say, I'm talking about another team, just doesn't say, hey, we'll just wait for him to become a free agent this offseason when you have to buy him out. Mm-hmm. So maybe a team is ready to take a chance on him this year. I do think there's interest. I think teams are checking into it. I think teams are talking internally about it. I think they have to because Evander is such a good player. And you're doing your job by talking about it and discussing it. But I think that there are a lot of barriers to cross before you get to a point where there's a legitimate trade. And, you know, we talked about the three-way trade last week. Again, you know, for that middleman team, what's your motivation for taking on Evander Kane for three more years past this year, even at just $1.75 million? What's San Jose going to give you? And does San Jose want to give that up? And what's the fascination team, the team that Evander Kane, what might they give you? And will that team want to give that up? So there's a lot going on here. But I will say, though, that there is definitely interest. Teams are looking into it. I am also under the impression that Evander, you know, let's not forget that Evander Kane has a three-team trade clause, which basically means that there are only three teams that the Sharks can trade him to.
Unless he waives it.
Unless he waives it. And I do believe that Evander will waive it because he wants to get out of the AHL. That's obvious. But I'm not sure if he's going to waive it for just anybody. You know, I don't know if he's going to waive it to go to, say, Arizona, right? Arizona is always a common destination because of their willingness recently to take on bad contracts just for draft picks.
Yeah.
So that's just an example. I'm not saying that Arizona, I've heard Arizona being in these talks, really, but I don't know if he would waive it to go to a team that, what are they right now, 4-12 or something like that. I do think that he wants to win. And so his list may expand past three teams, but it's not going to expand much farther than that because, well, how many teams, you know, have a chance to compete and to win? And are also interested in him too. I think that's the other combination part. And so that's why, that list, I believe will expand. There is a willingness for that because the guy wants to get out of the AHL. But it's not one of those things where I think, or I've been led to believe that he's willing to go just anywhere to get back to the NHL or to get out of San Jose.
Yeah. And we talked about Kevin LeBanc and Jake DeBrusk, one for one, it takes two to tango. Mm-hmm. In this situation, if you try to execute that three-team trade, you basically have to have a full-blown wedding party out there to execute that trade. You got to have a Cupid shuffle going on. There's no tango involved in like the six, seven, eight people that will need to all agree to the exact terms and negotiations and everything. And the biggest thing I want people to note is the trade deadline is March 21st. So that's the big key,
right?
Moving
there's
forward.
A lot of time. Yeah.
In the Evander Kane saga that we've dubbed it. If a trade were to happen, it has to happen by 3 p.m. Eastern time on that date. And we've talked about possible destinations before. We've talked about his connection with Joe Thornton and, you know, if he'd be able to go play and compete with Florida. But like you said, and it's emphasized there, it will come down to an ownership decision. Will the owner be able to handle the nightmare of PR that they're going to get? So it's going to be a tough one. We're going to ride the wave until it crashes and burns because that's what waves do. And again, just reiterating, March 21st, write it down, bookmark it, put it on your calendar, agenda, Apple Reminder, Alexa, whatever you want to use. It's going to be a hot day, and one of the names, if he's not traded before then, Evander Kane. So.
Right, right. And I just want to add to that, right now that is what I'm hearing, but it does just take one team to be interested that can close this deal really fast. So mm-hmm. that could happen too. And other thing too, I wanted to remind everybody about is that Evander Kane has a lot of leverage here. Insofar as, I mean, maybe not that much leverage because he's in the AHL, but he has more leverage than you might think insofar as obviously he has his three-team trade clause. But also, too, if he just sits it out this season, he's still a pretty young player. He's going to be, you know, 31. And if the Sharks buy him out, then he becomes an unrestricted free agent. And he can choose where he wants to go. And he becomes so much more valuable because now teams can sign him for 1 year, 2 years, and for a very low amount. Basically, no risk to low risk contract. Yep. And so that might be what he may want in the end, if no team really, you know, steps up for him this year, that just, right, you know, just wait it out and wait for the Sharks to buy him out, because what else are they going to do with him over the next 3 years or so? And so that's something to keep in mind, that he does have more leverage in this case than maybe it appears.
All right. Well, that wraps up the chatter of rumors and, well, not the rumors, but the chatter involving Evander Kane's trade possibilities. Getting to our final segment of the week, our SportLogic stat of the week, but this week is the SportLogic stats of the week, and we alluded to it in the introduction, and those who have stuck with us so far, which is everyone, I'm presuming, we are highlighting the pleasantly surprising gameplay and statistics of Noah Gregor, specifically his shooting stats. And there's four categories, essentially. We're going on a per-game basis. At even strength, we're going to put all this out there up front. Noah Gregor's top five for the Sharks in these four shooting categories that are tracked on SportLogic: shot attempts, shots on net, slot shots, and inner slot shots. INNER, inner slot shots. So I'm going to throw some numbers out there. I'm going to slow my talking down to make sure everyone's able to kind of comprehend, because I do know that sometimes I do auctioneer these podcasts at times. So Noah Gregor currently, as of right now, at the date that we noted earlier, he sits at 4.80 shot attempts per game. That's fourth on the team behind Erik Karlsson and just ahead of Tommy Hertl, everyone's beloved Tomas Hertl, or Tomas Squirtle, if you saw the meme from Snipe City 420, you should go take a look at that. Shang's going to get it on his in his DMs here in about 20 minutes. So
I've seen it. It's good.
It's amazing, isn't it? I'm going to get it on a shirt somehow, one way or another. I'm going to find a way to do it. But going back to Noah Gregor's proficiency, he is third in shots on net per game at 2.60, behind only the aforementioned Tomas Hertl and Timo Meier. He's fourth in slot shots at 1.30 per game behind Meier, Hertl, and Dahlin. And he's fifth at inner slot shots at 0.70 per game behind Meier, Hertl, Dahlin, and surprisingly, Nick Bonino. So, Shang, Noah Gregor, where did he come from?
Well, Noah Gregor, I actually think I talked about him a couple weeks ago. I think when we're talking about Nick Bonino and just how Nick Bonino's career track, and or maybe I wrote about it. I may have written about Nick Bonino's career track a couple weeks ago, and how Nick Bonino himself struggled to establish himself in the AHL. It took him about 3-4 years in the Ducks system before he became a regular.
Mm-hmm.
And I mentioned that in relation to a Noel Gregor, to a John Leonard, insofar as you got to have patience with these guys. You know, not everybody steps in like a Jonathan Dahlin maybe, or a Tomáš Hertl and is a phenom from the beginning, that sort of thing. Some guys take a couple of years. Some guys take 3-4 years to kind of find their game. And want to add with Noel Gregor that this is only, he's only played 10 games, so let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. But all these stats are very encouraging because they show a player that is playing to his strengths and succeeding in his strengths. Another stat that from SportLogic is Gregor is, I think, top 5 in rush chances too, which makes sense with his speed. And so, what?
Oh, I was just saying, Noah Gregor, vroom.
Yep, exactly.
Just, see you later.
Yeah, no, he's the fastest Sharks player, and that speed is being, you know, he's been the fastest Sharks player for a couple of years, but that speed is being put to good use this season. And so this is all very promising, and let's hope he can keep it up because it gives the Sharks another quality forward. And, you know, Balzers is out hurt now.
So basically on a team with very lackluster winger depth right now, Shane, Noah Gregor's emergence has been much needed.
Right, absolutely. And somebody that can maybe play in top 9 has shown so far. He's been able to slide up and down with Tomáš Hertl on the second line and played well with Nick Bonino on the third line. I'm not sure if where Gregor's offensive production is going to be at in the end, but a guy that can skate like that and consistently get shots and chances and be dangerous is super valuable still, even if he's not scoring as many goals as you think he should be with the quality of chances he's getting.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard to even get those chances. And so that's what Gregor has been doing on a consistent basis. And so hopefully he has turned the corner and he's figured it out. And I will say that even back to before his Sharks debut, talking with scouts who were watching him in the AHL, they liked him. They saw a guy that had 20-goal NHL potential. They liked his speed. They liked his shot. Just the game needed refinement, needed polishing, needed those details. And that seems to be what is happening with Noel Gregor's game, that the details are there. He's winning more puck battles. He's better along the wall. He's not turning it over in the neutral zone quite as much, just things like that. And so he's gotten the details a little more taken care of so far, and the speed and shot are still there. His qualities aren't being lost in sort of the negative things, the mistakes that he may have made or was making last year and the year before.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, you know, this is very promising for a Sharks team that all of a sudden they have kind of an interesting, maybe not a high-end group of wingers here besides Meyer, but they have an interesting group of wingers here kind of out of nowhere with Dahlin and Balzers and Gregor and Barabanov. Yeah. None of these guys were, you know, very, very highly touted, and they're pretty good players. They may not be elite players, elite wingers, but they've all done a pretty good job in their way with kind of their skills, and it's nice to see Gregor kind of join that company. You know, the Sharks were hoping, you know, to add. They were hoping that Barabanov would repeat last year's success. They were hoping that Dahlin would come over and show that he can hang offensively at the NHL level. And they're hoping that somebody in their Barracuda group, be it a John Leonard or Noel Gregor or Sasha Chmielewski or Joachim Blickfeld, one of those guys would emerge and look like a guy that really belonged in the NHL. And it looks like, at least right now, it looks like Gregor might be that guy who's emerged.
Yeah, I remember watching him before I would watch in depth, I guess, is a bad way to say it. I remember watching him. It didn't seem like his hands and his feet were always synced up. It's like he would always bust loose, but the hands were just like 6 feet behind him trying to catch up to what his legs were doing. And it goes back to what you're saying, the coaching staff getting him polished up and getting the details refined off the puck as well as on the puck. And it's starting to kind of form that circle of good all-around gameplay, and that's what you want to see from guys like Noah Gregor. So, all right, Shang, we've reached our time limit. And by time limit, I mean we're at the end of our outline here, and there's nothing more on the docket for us to talk about. But it's been another jam-packed episode, another hour-plus long episode full of exclusive insider content, of course. You can only find here on the San Jose Hockey Now podcast. But really quick, you still have the sale going on San Jose Hockey Now?
Yes, I do. Thank you for bringing that up. Also, too, we have a subscriber Q&A with Jasper Weatherby. So if you're a subscriber, thank you so much for subscribing and pop in your questions to my article that was asking for you to pop your questions in there. And I will ask Jasper as many of your questions as I can. Should talk to him sometime next week. So you still have this week to put in your questions. So any questions you have, and this is, again, just for subscribers, subscriber Q&A with Jasper Weatherby. And like I said, we have a sale going on with the website. Sale's actually been on for the last couple months, and just sort of let it go and didn't really say much about it or advertise it much. But now with this Q&A with Jasper, thanks again for bringing it up. It's good to put it out there that the website right now, the subscription is just $22.99. It's $7 less. The regular price is $29.99. So basically you get 2 free months for your year. And so check it out, and also drop some questions for Jasper.
Makes for a great Christmas present, just putting that out there. All right, folks, that's pretty much going to wrap it up for us this week. Make sure you guys, as always, and I say this every single time, hug your family, hug your loved ones, pet the dog, pet the damn dog. Like, seriously, give the dog some pets, give it some treats, pet the cat.
Walk the dog.
Until the cat says to not. Yeah, walk the dog, Shang, looking at you. I can feel Mushu staring at me, and I don't even see her. She's like, you're impeding on my walk time. But again, make sure you all take care of yourselves. Stay safe and stay hydrated.